You're listening to the Movie Crew Podcast. Tonight we talk about David Cronenberg's A History of Violence.
Not to be confused with David Cronenberg's History of Violence, because
it's called A
History. Movies with violence.
I thought you were about to tell us a really personal, a juicy personal story.
How about how David Cronenberg hurt Mike?
He's been hurting me over a long
time. I was ready for it. Tell us everything.
This is a safe space.
You no trouble. Me.
You will be a weapon. You will be a minister of death, praying for war. But until that day, you are cute. Sound off like you got a pair.
Oh, yes! I was wondering what would break first. Your spirit or your money?
You get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir.
God is dead.
Fill your hand, you son of a bitch!
The city is headed for a disaster of biblical proportion.
What do you mean, biblical?
What he means is Old Testament,
yes.
Mr. Mayor. Real wrath of God type stuff.
Dead.
Fire and brimstone coming down from the skies. Rivers and seas boiling.
40 years of darkness, earthquakes, volcanoes.
The dead rising from the grave.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
Welcome to the podcast, Movie Crew Podcast, Movie Makers Talking Movies. We're your host. I'm editor Brian Elkins. With me here tonight, cinematographer Jared Callen.
How you doing, Brian?
I am swell, feeling a little violent.
Yeah, nice. I'm gonna smack you around a little bit.
Ooh, don't tease. Don't tease.
Ooh, you know what, don't like worry, it. You'll pull me back in. Don't worry.
Show me your ass in those stairs. We also have with us cinematographer Mike Griggs.
Who's this Johnny guy? Oh, I mean, hey, what's up?
Who are you? Mike? Joey? Mike? I don't even recognize you anymore.
Joey.
Crazy Joey.
We also have with us costume designer Kristen Jones.
Hello.
And here we are talking about the 2005 film A History of Violence. A film that we probably should have talked about after, you know, having discussed The Godfather and Goodfellas and some other mob movies, you know, because this is like...
We haven't done The Godfather.
I know. We need those films, like, to
okay.
You know, to have discussed a little bit, and then we got to this one. We're doing this kind of,
so
like,
you're
backwards.
Saying that this film operates on a director's bias, that everyone knows about the mob movies and the things of that nature, so that... And expects a shorthand with the audience? Is that what you're saying?
No, what are you
Brian?
Talking about? You don't think that if
I
you haven't seen a mob
fun.
Movie, you wouldn't understand that these motherfuckers are coming to seek
I
revenge
this,
for past transgressions?
I think this movie treats mobsters like the Mandalorian treats Mandalorians, where everywhere he goes, everyone's like, oh yeah, I've heard the stories. This movie expects us to have heard the stories about the mobsters and know what that means and know the implications.
I'm sorry, are there people who don't know what mobsters are, though?
I mean, not necessarily.
No, I feel like you learn about it in, like, class, though. Like, in history
like everyone
class.
Knows what a vampire is.
Well, know? It's not so much knowing mobster. It's more about knowing mob cinema and that Hollywood has always had, well, ever since The Godfather, a... I don't want to call it a fetish. A romanticization of the mobster, of violence and on screen and how it is... usually justified because the gangsters in those movies are doing what? Killing other villains, right?
Gangsters.
Yeah. And they're doing it for the family. People that we spend a lot of time with. Think about like, you know, I mean, hell, The Godfather opens on a wedding. And what are those people asking The Godfather to do? Are they asking him anything terrible? No. Hey, I need this part in this movie. Hey, I have, some issues down here at the union or something. Can you take care of this for me? He doesn't understand that these, you know, the Godfather's probably going to kill some people in order to achieve those goals. But still, it's family, you know? It's a little justifiable. This movie kind of destroys that narrative a little bit. Just a little bit.
Does it?
You mean because family's trying to kill family? Like, is that?
Well, I don't think this is romanticizing violence in this. I think you, like, are left with the aftermath. Like, even if you're okay with the gore in this movie, you should still know it's not, it's upsetting and disturbing just off of the everybody else's reaction to it. All the characters in the scene.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're saying this movie isn't like, hey, violence is cool, guys. Wink. It's just, like, brutal and, dare I say, violent.
But I do think it's interesting because the mobsters in this movie sort of do have the only, I don't want to say justification, but they are trying to make something right, whereas everyone else, like the two original guys at the beginning were just like needlessly violent and cruel. And yeah, I feel like there is actually a distinction and it does actually play into the mob world.
I think those characters are just there to juxtapose like what we think this small town guy is, to then make an even higher contrast between that and this, you know, crazy Joey who's really good at killing. Like these are versions of violence. Like the casual. I love the opening scene because it's so fucking nonchalant. Like those dudes have nowhere to be and they are moving slow and killing is like that for them. It's hot. It's 8 a.m. I can't believe it's going to be a hot day. I guess we'll go kill before we get some water kind of shit. Like it's just so normal for them to then have Viggo Mortensen's character be like this small town dude where even the one fucking cop is like, we take care of our own. There's so many contrasts here in the ways that violence comes out in our lives and the people that we know. I mean, even the fucking son, like his whole story is such an interesting back and forth dichotomy between nature and nurture. And here's this, they're going through the same things the whole time. I think this is a really interesting exploration of the violent nature of humanity.
Or how it's a contagion or.
Yeah.
I do think the one issue I took with how, yeah, violence kind of spreads is that if that family is as solid as they try to present in that opening scene, which is a little much for me.
Oh, it's so cheesy.
She
was just telling me.
Oh my God.
There's monsters, Jack.
I was like, are you serious? Do people like this?
No.
Dude, oh man. That whole, all that dialogue.
Like even the most loving family, I was like, I don't think
that's saying that there are monsters. And you know what? There's no such thing as monsters.
But it's if like that family is as solid as that, then they would not have unraveled as quickly as they did. Especially the son who witnesses his father doing or being involved in doing something. And then he quickly turns on him. Like, I think he would have his father's back, but there's clearly, now that I watched it a second time, and there's clearly actually, I think there's something much more sinister underneath the surface that they're just refusing to see. And maybe that is why that opening scene reads is so false, is because it's like they're all kind of playing this role.
Yeah.
That you later see come out, that you later start to see all of the cracks, because they should not have unraveled that quickly.
I think they're trying to say something like, you know, we all have this evil in us, or this like a tendency that we could like be violent because everybody's so perfect, whether even the son, you know, and the son gets bullied in a locker room and he says like, doing violence to me just seems pointless and cruel. Like who fucking talks like that? Like,
oh my
God. You know, and so he's so like, you know, he's so goody two shoes. Right. But then he gets the fucking violence drawn out of him where he fucking just unleashes on that kid. And then, you know, and then like he even fucking kills somebody at the end, you know, and then he actually, you know, he his violent self meets his father for the first time covered in blood. And his dad's looking at him like a fucking crazed lunatic and snatches the gun at him. It's like, you know, it's like now I've unleashed this thing in you. But like you had to tear down that, like, you know, I'm a good guy thing. You know, he just that's also how they show Viggo. Exactly. He's picking up trash outside of his fucking shop and he's fixing things. He's like the perfect guy, you know, everything, you know, he thinks about every little thing and, you know, his life is squeaky clean.
Well, I don't think it's just the family's life. I think it's this town. It's everything. It's the like a history of violence. What are we talking about? Are we talking about Tom Stahl's character or are we talking about America? and our history of violence. I mean, even his little fucking town on this diner in the street is like, even his fucking goddamn perfect fucking mailbox. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah, with it like being perfectly autumn fall colors everywhere outside, like, yeah.
Yeah, and like how it's crooked is like so picturesque. It's like, oh, get out of here. That's like from a 50s fucking Leave It to Beaver fucking neighbor. Get out of here. Like, everything has this, like, idealistic look that gets tore down. And I
agree. I was going to say that actually is why I think the mobsters are the most interesting characters in this, is because they are the most human characters in this.
No, they're not human. You barely get to know anything about them. They're just
spinning
bullshit.
Yeah, but you know that they're just
they
like...
kill someone.
Yeah, but you know that they're just like, they're like, hey, I'm here and I have a problem with you and I'm going to toy with you because I want to fuck with you. Everyone else is like, I'm actually very perfect. Thank you.
I'll see you at church.
And actually,
everybody's like super perfect now. Like, they all have their problems. Like, even the son has like that scene with the where he's smoking pot and he's got like that very pessimistic outlook on life.
Yeah.
I don't think everything's perfect. There's plenty of cracks that they show you.
They show you cracks, but you don't necessarily know what's underneath them. And so I think it's really easy to kind of gloss over. And I actually want to point out another crack, which was at
the beginning.
Well, it's
because of his lie, though, right? Like, his lie is the root of everything. Like, if he had been honest.
The kid?
The father.
Oh, Joey.
Yeah.
Tom. Yeah. The kid, when he's getting bullied, and not only is he just, like, super annoying and, like, I wanted to beat him up too, but, like... the way he actually starts to, like, provoke the guy, I was like, yo, this kid is not that nice, actually.
He
starts to unleash it. Yeah. And also, he's playing younger than he is, which I don't like that. He's even playing younger than the way he reacts to things, like, Mom! And, like, all these, like, it's so weird that he's playing, like 12 instead of, like, you know, 16.
But I think that's also part of his whole illusion of being perfect is because, yeah, he's trying to play himself as the victim. He's trying to play himself off as younger than he is. So when he acts like super violent and he just like unleashes later in the movie, I actually don't think that comes out of nowhere. I don't think that has anything to do with the violence he just saw. Like, that's not from that. That just gave him permission to act the way he has always wanted to.
Yeah. 100%. Well, but permission is maybe a good word that this movie, I think, explores in those violent things, because like the nature versus nurture concept of was it innate in this kid because of Joey's crazy Joey nature, or was it like nurtured based on seeing this evolution of his father that he had never known? He's never seen his dad's dark side. Like, and then his dad fucking hits him. Like, he literally shouts in his face, "Oh no, we solve things
by hitting."
He goes, "No, we solve things by killing them." And he fucking hits him. And like, oh, you literally just solved this conversation by hitting your son. So
his
the
son's facial reaction right there is priceless. It's perfect. He's like, I just fucking it broke his brain that his father just struck him, like the ultimate, like, you know, betrayal. And then he had to fucking, you know, run out. Yeah, that was a great moment.
The other thing that I think plays into the illusion here is the fact that they are in the rural countryside, and you do actually have to be violent, and you do, like, that's why you have a shotgun in your house. Yeah. It's not just for fun. It's because you do have to, there's more violence when you're in the countryside, even just with animals, and, you know, like, I know he said he wasn't a farmer, but there were horses in the background. Like, what does he do? Are there horses just like there in the background for like fun? I guess he runs the diner.
It's the neighbor's horses.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, anyway.
It could be neighbor. He does have like some sort of barn situation that the truck comes out of. So like, it makes sense that the dudes from Philadelphia who don't spend a lot of time in the country are like, this motherfucker's a farmer.
He probably lives on farmland, but he still owns the diner, you know?
Yeah.
Just because he's a great guy and he just wants to share food and hospitality, you know?
He makes great coffee, guys. Oh, like,
yeah, I can imagine.
Not like Philly. You can't get good coffee in Philly.
No. Mm-mm. Well, not in the early 2000s anyways.
I do like Ed Harris's makeup there. Oh, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Joey.
Ed Harris is always a class act.
You tell me.
Yeah, I thought the sunglasses were a little too much. you know, my first watch, and I was like, oh, that's too much.
No, but you need him.
It really, it really helps the reveal.
Yeah, you know? you need.
I like it also because, like, when they walk in the diner with their sunglasses on, you just know immediately. I mean, in case you didn't get it any other way. But immediately, bad news, they don't belong. Something bad is going to happen.
No one else walks in with sunglasses.
Not like that, anyway. Not that style.
Yeah.
Oh, look, the reporters are back. Those are reporters.
I found it interesting that with how much that car was trying to, like, play into the story, that they were de-emphasizing the brand. Like,
yeah, and just showing the headlight that one.
Just showing the headlight. Like, let's pan away from the fucking, like, logo on the front of the center of the car that would make it very recognizable. No, let's recognize it by the headlight.
You know, and brands are all over this thing. And it's just, they're out, like, honey bunches of oats. The kid, I love the shot of the kid. Yeah. Like, you know, dad comes running home and, like, get the fucking shotgun. And he's just sitting there, like,
he's
fucking,
just,
like,
with the milk
trying to have
down
breakfast, y'all. Like,
I'm sorry, can we talk about that, though? Because, like, he's like, oh, my God, they're coming to your house. And then he, with an injured foot, runs. He runs.
2 miles.
Yeah.
I was like, are you, like, instant divorce. Like, are you for real? You're going to protect me by, like, running? Like, something would have already happened. Like, what are you talking about?
What was he supposed to do?
Hitchhike or something. I don't care. Call the police. Do literally anything but limp your way. He limped his way home to protect his wife.
Hold up. You want him in the middle of this podunk town to call a fucking Uber and wait?
I said hitchhike.
I didn't see a single car.
It was 7 o'clock in
the
morning. His wife was still asleep in the bed. Like, it's early. True. Yeah.
No, but listen. If gangsters are on your way to your house, and you're gonna take what 30 minutes to limp your way there, like, what do you think you're gonna do? What do you think?
Well,
you're
he did
do?
Call her like immediately, and she answered after the second or third call. So there is some amount of like time stuff that, but like he did make it home really quick. Like, it seems like it's more like a mile or two, maybe, which is at least a 7 to 10 minute walk. And how long does it take her to get the fucking shotgun?
But he's injured too. He's injured.
No, for sure. Which is why he's like covered in sweat and huffing and puffing.
But he's like Superman, you know? So, I mean, he could probably, you know, it's probably just a normal
person. I
forgot.
He's our great American hero. Okay, excuse me. That was my mistake. He's a great guy for doing that.
He's manly mans.
No, he ran home to save them, to protect them.
Yeah. Did a great job of that.
He did.
God damn, Kristen, what do you want?
I was thinking, so the whole time, I would be mad at him, not because like he lied, which is like obviously a problem, but like the fact that his wife is sitting there and she's protecting him and she's defending him and she's saying, hey, you need to leave. She's doing all of this when it turns out that he's like this rich gangster. That's what I would be the most upset about, is like, you let me do all of this when you could have done it. You brought this and then I had to take care of your problem. That would have made me the most upset.
I don't think he's a rich gangster. I don't think he had a cut in that. Yeah.
No.
He's like, he looks
left.
Like you're doing pretty well, motherfucker, you know?
So his brother's rich. He would have been rich. So that's why I assumed that he would have been rich too. But no, he's like, oh no, I went to the desert for 3 years and like cast off my everything and became this like brain dead American hero. And like that's what would have upset me. Like, I would have needed you to like use your brain at some point.
Become a brain dead. He actually became a normal fucking guy and like became
a
part of this community.
He acts brain dead through most of this. He does not seem to have any thought in his head until Joey comes back. Brain dead is okay, so he has like some brain waves, but like it's not like I would say low intelligence. Okay,
like Forrest Gump, like lower intelligence.
Yeah, like Forrest Gump, lower intelligence.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Like Jenny, I'm not a smart man, but I still know what love is.
You sure are naughty, Jenny.
Shh, my parents in the other room.
Are you talking about just because he was kind of subdued in that, and he was just in shock? He was like, "Wow, look at my wife, she's getting all hot and crazy."
Yeah, I think he was in shock for most of the movie until Joey came back. He was just like, wow, things happen and people talk and wow, what is life? Wow.
What
amazing.
Is life?
Wow. Good thing my wife's here to take care of me. Wow.
I did not get him as slow.
It's okay.
No,
I'm happy to point it out. It was irritating.
In fact, I thought Viggo was really, really good in the beginning. I was like, oh, yeah, you know, this is like just like the
average
diner worker that is in, like, you know, that works at a diner in fucking middle America. Like,
thank you. Yes. Thank you for backing me up there. Okay. So I will also say
that is what the story is about, Kristen. This is not about a bar in fucking New York. This isn't Coyote Ugly sequel. Okay. What the fuck? I'm like, put our expectations in check.
I can't comment on I haven't seen. I don't know. Maybe it's a masterpiece. I don't know. But I will say, yeah, so if, when you first see him, like, yes, you just get the general impression. He's just like a nice guy. He's just there taking care of, you know, whatever. But the more the movie goes on, and especially if you watch it more than once, no, he acts slow. It's more than...
Okay. Yeah. Are you talking about, like, when they're driving and she's all like, well, both kids are out, and he's like... Cool. So where are we going? I still just asked you that question. I don't get it.
Okay.
Like that kind of a moment.
So that scene is a little confusing because if you watch the movie, you would the next scene is they're at their house and she's dressing in a cheerleading outfit and they have sex. So it's like, why would you not know where your home is? But there's a deleted scene there where she's taking him to, like, the local teenage watering hole where I guess people go skinny dipping or some shit like that. And they go there, and they're going to skinny dip, and mosquitoes bite them, and they say, fuck it, and they go home. But that scene was removed, so it jumps from the car to the bedroom.
I'm so glad they removed that scene.
Because the bedroom gives the same exact vibe, and that mosquito situation would have slowed things way, way down.
That's also why their hair is wet in the beginning of that scene and, like, slightly dried. Like, Viggo starts the bedroom scene and his hair's all messed up where it was wet and he's dried it with a towel.
I didn't notice that. I was just seeing him, like, you know.
I noticed her hair. I was like, why is her hair kind of damp? And I was like, is that just like a style of the early 2005s?
I thought she was just getting sexy, like, you know.
It's like kind of PC.
I thought she was just trying to get sexy, you know.
Yeah.
Like, fucking Jamie Lee Curtis in True Lies. You know, she fucking takes the water from the vase.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Fucking exactly.
Do it slowly.
Perfect.
What the fuck were we even talking about? God damn.
I don't know, but I'm going to change the subject because speaking of something dragging the movie, did anyone else think that even though this is an hour and a half-ish, like, it felt really long.
You're fucking anything crazy. Else? Stop that. Shut up. No, we'll not hear
it. No, I thought it was paced really well.
Dragged. Like,
so
I paused
fast.
It
so fast.
After an hour, and I was like, how has it only been an hour?
Yeah. I got to agree. There are some. For only being an hour and a half, there are several moments where I'm like, how much more of this are we at? Oh, okay, cool. No, we're coming up on the halfway mark. All right. Oh, we're coming up on the... Like, I had to, like, click the button and
Netflix,
see where in the movie we were so I can understand, oh, this is why the pacing is slowing down now. It's because this is the way that the acts are about to move. It didn't feel like it flowed as well as I wanted it to.
Even on my rewatch, I was like, did I misread that? Is it actually 2.5 hours? Like, but I was correct.
I was shocked with how much it felt like they crammed in the amount of time, is what it felt like to me. And like that fucking score, like, dude, it you know what? It feels slow because we're in a this slow fucking town. I don't know. It just had the vibe right to me. I think it was paced pretty damn well. Like I said, it feels like they put a lot of story in there for just being an hour and a half, especially when he's like, fuck it, now I gotta go deal with my brother, after it felt like we've already done now we're headed to fucking Philly.
But the pacing of that was even fucking weird because
all the, like, driving,
yeah, the whole driving thing, like, he's clearly asleep, he wakes up in the middle of the night, so it's what, maybe midnight, 2 o'clock
he's
in the morning.
He's got 16 hours to get there.
Well,
yeah. They were 400 miles
fucking
away.
Indianapolis to Philly is 12 hours or 10 hours, something like
they
that.
They showed how many miles
hours.
It was, and then he shows up, and he's like, I just did 15, 16 hours. Yeah. You're going to have to stop and piss a couple times, Mike.
But this is what I'm saying.
Eat a fucking sandwich.
But 15 or 16 hours does not go from nighttime to nighttime. 15 or 16 hours goes from nighttime to daytime or daytime to nighttime. He goes from nighttime and he gets there and then it's still nighttime. So maybe it's like 5:30 in the morning.
Maybe he got the call at like 6 and then 6 a.m.
He was asleep in bed and his family was asleep.
I'd be asleep.
So it's at least 9 o'clock
at
night.
I'm not up at 6 a.m., Mike.
Yeah. No, but that's what I'm saying. Like, he can't, like 10 hours still, if it was 9 o'clock at night, that's still 9 o'clock in the morning. So he would have gotten there in the daytime, but he shows up to the bar and it's night. And then it doesn't get daytime until he finishes his conversation with his brother. So there's just a weird, like, time situation thing there that bothers me.
It went by and literally scene, done. I didn't even have time to think about it.
Why does he say I spent 15 hours driving in the car when it's still fucking nighttime? I'm sorry. That's annoying.
Well, no, if he left at 5 a.m., right? Or even if he left at 4 a.m., for 15 hours, it would be
dark.
Then
give me one fucking driving shot where it's daytime and he would have gotten there at night and that would have made sense. But he didn't. It was all nighttime driving shots.
Was it? They cut out the day one, you know? We don't need to see it. He's on a night mission.
We do, though, because if they didn't have, I mean, I know there are a couple of markers there, but, like, there was a half a second where I was like, wait, was he only like an hour away from his brother? It happens really quickly, I think. And then he has it with the line and, of course, the...
Make up your mind. Is it quick? Is it long? Come on.
No, I thought that was actually the fastest part. I was like, what just happened? With everything else, they have to take time to talk about it.
Pretty quickly. Actually.
Yeah, they wrap it up quickly. Like everything else, they take so long on, and then all of a sudden, he's just somewhere else, and he just drove there in like a minute.
Yeah, again, he comes like 15, 16 hours, and then he goes back, and it's what, like, maybe 7 or 8 o'clock, like they're sitting down to dinner. It's dark outside, but it's still they're sitting down to dinner. But it just was like fucking the timing's fucking weird. That's all I'm saying. It pulls me out of the end.
You know, driving home is always quicker.
Apparently, it was a third less time.
Yeah, the movie's so incredible that that's the bullshit you got to worry about. Okay,
was it incredible?
Like, let's just nitpick it.
Was it incredible? Because I was surprised at the reviews that I saw. I was like, wait, which part of this do they like, though? And then they said the script.
It is incredible.
And I was like, really, though?
It is pretty fucking amazing.
Like what? Which part?
My favorite thing is that, like, it's really a very simple plot. And every single time I watch it, I uncover a different layer, a different subtext, a different read, a different understanding that I never saw before. Like,
that's
there's
so
multi-layers in a scene. Like, let's take the cheerleading scene, for example, right? When she's going to seduce her husband, right? There's just, like, so much going on there, right? They're both pretending, right? She's pretending to be somebody young, right? A cheerleader, just like her husband's pretending to be a normal person and not an evil gangster. You know, it's nice. We're setting up their normal sex life. We're getting backstory. She doesn't know. She never knew him when he was younger. And it's a fucking scene. It's one fucking scene. And ends in a nice 69 moment, too. I mean, it's so much going on there in one little teeny sex scene. It's beautiful. The whole movie's like that. I love, like, watching the end and, like, when all the shit's, like, finally over and Tom fucking comes in the home, or is he Joey, or now he's Joey and Tom, who knows? Ooh, I don't fucking know. Vigo's acting is so good. Like, he gives looks, and you're like, oh, that's Joey. Oh, that's Tom. Oh, that's Joey. Oh, that's, I don't know who this one is. Oh, it's, I don't know. I love all this stuff. It is very layered. It gives you something to think about.
I love how that last scene, when Tommy Joe comes home, and basically nobody speaks. It's all done in looks, you know, and then even, you know, the little girl goes and grabs dad a plate, you know, invites him back into the family. The innocence, you know, who doesn't really know what's happening.
Yeah.
I was actually disappointed that she doesn't have any sort of outbursts that she should have. I was looking forward to that.
She should have thrown the plane on the ground and been like, this is bullshit.
Maybe not at the end, though. I thought the end was like sweet. But no, everyone else is acting out. And so even if she doesn't directly witness the violence, it would still spread to her because everyone
else is. Are you talking about the little kid having a reaction?
Yeah, the little girl.
Maybe her leaving the store was supposed to be her acting out where she's like, I don't fucking want to be here right now. She just wanders.
Cronenberg can't hire like good kid actors.
Dude, she's not good. I'm sorry. She's not good.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's, hello, mommy.
Did you forget about my shoes?
There's monsters, Jack. You know, and then like all the whole you know, when she goes over and she's staring into the fucking, yeah, I don't know.
Why are you freaking out? There's a new toy. Ah, bah, 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 bah. Yeah. Yeah, it's not good.
Bad kid acting.
But honestly, some of that kid acting felt pretty on par with much of the delivery of many of the other family scenes. Like, there's a lot of cheesy line deliveries in this fucking movie. Like, I'll call it the first scene when we see the family and the whole, like, dream, like, waking up thing. Like, all of that is just so fucking over the top.
I think that's done on purpose, though. Like, even Vigo and Maria Bello, who are great in every other scene in the movie, are hamming that one up.
Yeah, it's awkward, though. Like, but much of that still feels like it's dripping in some of the other scenes. Like,
yeah,
I don't understand that choice.
The news reporter outside the car.
Oh yeah,
walking in. I think he fucking acts his ass off right there because that is such a stupid scene.
Yeah,
and he does his fucking best. I like his deliveries, but when looking at that scene, it just feels like hammy. It feels like ABC Family TV.
But maybe
that's part of it, you know.
Is it supposed to feel like that? Because I don't know. I don't know.
It's supposed to feel a little sappy.
I don't think it helps the movie though.
I think the dream sequence part, yes. I don't know about the rest of the movie, but I didn't really feel it in the rest of the movie. I mean, some of it is David Cronenberg's writing.
Sure. Yeah.
It could be. You know.
But also, I wonder. I don't know. We talked last week about how Cronenberg says that he doesn't fucking rehearse. I think this movie feels, many of the scenes feel over rehearsed. It feels like theatrical, like we've done this play 1,000 times and we're doing it another. This is the matinee performance. What are we thinking about for lunch right now? Like, a lot of the dialogue delivery feels like that. It's a little sing-songy. It's a little like, but we're gonna rehearse what the hell. And it just feels like, I don't know, canned and cheesy. It doesn't sit well with me. For how heavy this movie is with the violent nature of humanity and all of our histories, like some of those delivery choices feel really, really strange.
You guys are just talking about the kids, right?
No, there's a lot of it. Yeah, like the subtext is there, the context is there. It's just the fucking dialogue delivery, and so much of this is it just wooden dialogue written in the first place, and so the actors are like, well, you can't really say this in any other way than this cheesy, so I'm just going to do it that way. And Cronenberg's like, sounds great. I've never heard it before. This is what it sounds like. Cool. All right, we got it. Move on.
I didn't think the middle or the end of the movie, like I said, just those couple things at the beginning felt a little like, you know, all right, a little soapy, cheesy, you know.
Yeah.
I like all the banter stuff with the guys and the when he goes in, the other guy tells him about his wife, you know, he's been, you know, like.
I married her.
I married her and lasted 7 years, you know. Yeah. I liked all that stuff, you know, building that world. I like the fucking sheriff, the local sheriff. You know, he goes and has that very typical, we got nice people in this town, and we take care of our own, you know?
That's one of the scenes that I'm talking about. That whole scene, like, even from the gangsters. Oh, is there something I should know about, officer? Like, everybody's like, fucking hamming it up. What the hell?
Keep doing a good job, officer, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually go ahead.
No, I was like, I thought that scene played out okay, though. It felt like we've seen this scene before, but like all of, like, you know, the gangsters' responses were different, and I thought they were nice.
Man, you thought this was hammed up? We're definitely never watching the fucking Godfather.
No, I like the Godfather. We can watch that.
I mean, if you guys are having problems with fucking Ed Harris and the cop in this, how are you going to be able to handle Marlon Brando shoving shit down in his mouth? I'm just I
do actually struggle with that, yeah, because I rewatched it like a year or two ago, and I was like, man, this dude is just trying to milk all of these lines.
Acting
is done by actors.
I definitely don't have any problems with anything Ed Harris, Maria Bello, Viggo Mortensen are doing. Yeah, and I love everything William Hurt's doing, but I love everything William Hurt does.
Oh, Brohim, you love that?
Fuck yeah, dude.
Dude, yeah, dude.
I do. I do, too.
Especially when they finally land in that close-up, you know, right before he, like, turns his back. all of that shit plays so fucking well. He knows how to play a fucking wacky character.
He's funny as shit in this movie.
Yeah. He has a lot of fun in this fucking role.
Dude, he like leans in, he's like almost making out with him. You and with the blocking, you can't really tell. It's like, oh, are they about to kiss, bro? You know, like
I did feel that. The second time around, I was like, oh right, he does the thing. He's like, come on,
forehead. But on, but then they cut to that fucking over the shoulder, and it's just like, wow, that's awkward blocking.
Oh, it is definitely an intimate kind of moment for sure.
Yeah, I bet they should have cut to the other guy standing around going, you know, like when
give me a reaction shot where he's like,
you know,
where he kind of leans like to also see if he can figure out the perspective.
Yeah.
Well, Cronenberg had like this theory that like well, not theory, but this backstory for Richie that he was gay. That's why he's never married, and all of his henchmen are kind of good looking guys.
I did actually have that thought when he was talking about how he could never get married. I was like, is that guy gay? Wait a minute.
No woman could ever keep me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we get it. It was the lack of mustache on his goatee, wasn't it?
Oh, that was weird. I don't like that at all.
That was a weird 2005 choice. That's one of those things that does not age well.
He's got a long punim, like his lip, you know, at the top. And it just doesn't look right. He's just like, that didn't work.
No. It's an inherently douchey facial hairstyle.
Yeah. Hey, it makes you instantly hate him, too, though.
It totally does.
Okay. You can shoot this motherfucker in the head. I don't care.
Yeah, okay. He can die. He's your brother? Sorry.
There was no, like, a slight hesitation, like, it's my brother. Fuck it. You know, like.
Is it trailer time?
Sure. Yeah, I think so.
We're going to take a break. We're going to play the trailer for David Cronenberg's A History of Violence. We'll be right back.
One win and run coming right up, boys.
Bye.
Hey, Mr. Stahl.
Hey, Jared.
Come on, Pat. You down?
Thanks, Tom. Good as ever.
Have a good evening.
We're just closing up, fellas.
Coffee.
I'm sorry, we're closed.
Oh, I know that. I do know that.
Shut up!
We don't carry much cash here.
Don't move.
Do it!
Saved our lives.
Hello, my hero.
Tom Stahl is a family man with long-standing ties to this community. Right now, this community is rallying behind him and calling him a hero.
Way to go, Tommy.
Great, more reporters.
You don't look like reporters.
You're the big hero.
Really don't like talking about it, sir.
You sure took care of those two bad men, Joey.
My name is Tom. It's Joey.
You tell me.
Sarah? Sarah! My daughter, where is she?
What's going on, Dad?
They thought they knew me. Thought I was somebody else.
Nothing to worry about, Mrs. Stahl. I've been watching over.
I don't know what you want, and I don't really care.
You should care about what I want, because what I want might change your life. Why don't you ask Tom, and ask him how come he's so good at killing people?
All right, we're back. That was a trailer for David Cronenberg's A History of Violence. Whoever cut that trailer was a little too in love with Cross Dissolves. Holy fuck.
What are you?
Yeah. And all those fucking flash frames to make things feel more intense.
It was 2005. It was definitely dated then.
Oh, yeah. I felt, especially the sound effects that came through so much. God, so 2005. Holy fuck.
Other than that, does a pretty good job of selling the movie, I guess.
Oh, no. It sets it up pretty well.
It actually does, yeah. It's pretty close to the similar tone. It's a little flashier, but it makes sense for a trailer. It gives you the sense of the plot without giving everything away, maybe, does it?
If you go in cold, there's a thing where you don't know if for a while if Joey is fucking Tom.
Yeah,
you know.
That's true. That, yeah. I don't remember that big moment
where he actually, whenever he has to say, hey, are you Joey? And he has to sit down at the chair. It takes a minute. You know, he's like, yeah, I'm Joey.
Yeah.
I agree with the wife. At some point when, you know, the bad guy starts talking, you're like, oh, he's actually really smart and he wouldn't just go after the wrong person. So I'm going to believe him.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it was the cop who said that, right?
Oh, he came to that conclusion later. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, he did also come there. Yeah.
I do like.
Yeah, the only. Oh, I was going to say the only thing that threw me off the first time watching this about like the is he Joey or not was actually in the sex scene in the beginning when she puts on the cheerleader outfit and she says we didn't get to be teenagers together. For some reason, my brain interpreted that as like, oh, we grew up too fast. I was like, were they pregnant young or something like that? Like they didn't get to be teenagers together because we had to go straight into adulthood. Maybe that's why they're kind of young with this older teenager guy. And it was really only in the subsequent viewing that I was like, oh, right. They met after being teenagers.
Yeah.
So she's trying to like, yeah, that was just my awkward read of the situation. But in terms of things that kind of set up you not really necessarily knowing all of their history, that was one of the things that felt a little consciously ambiguous.
And with also with as old as that his son is, when the fuck did he leave the mob? Was he like 24?
Yeah.
You know, I was like, goddamn.
Yeah.
And like, he got out pretty early, didn't he?
Well, especially because they keep saying he has longstanding ties to the community and they know him. And I was like, he must have been here a while.
He left the mob and did 3 years in the desert and then fucking came and found her and had that son and then a young daughter years later, all while living in Mayberry. You know, yeah.
Well, that's why Richie has the line about, like, you've been Tom almost as long as you were Joey. Mm. And Viggo Mortensen was, like, I don't know, 48, I think, when this came out. So,
So he's older than I thought he would be.
Yeah. His wife is 38, so there's that classic Hollywood 10 years younger woman situation.
She was really taken with his cheeseburger he made at his diner. I don't know.
I guess, maybe. I mean, strictly speaking, if she's a lawyer now and like they met when she was 18, like he kind of put her through law school, so they've been through some shit together at least.
And they say in the movie they've been together like 20 years?
Something like that.
Oh, we did bring up the screenplay got an Oscar nomination, but this movie got another Oscar nomination, Best Supporting Actor for William Hurt?
Wow, that's interesting.
Isn't that crazy? He's in the movie for like, what, 7 minutes maybe at the end? Maybe eight? Definitely ain't 15. It's like nothing. Got a nomination for that.
I think Ed Harris probably did better than him in this movie. That's interesting.
Ed Harris is definitely in the movie more.
Yeah.
In the movie more doesn't necessarily mean he did a better job as the character, though. I mean,
I think what
this feels like a...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say this feels like an Ed Harris kind of role.
It does.
Whereas it does. William Hurt is... I know you don't see him as that kind of a person very often. He's usually the more like one with gravitas kind of situation. So to see him be this kind of playful, like psychotic... Loves his brother, but doesn't give a fuck because he's pissed kind of guy.
Big character.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And to make such an emotional impact with such a short scene is, I don't know, that's got to count for something too.
Touche on that.
I even liked his phone conversation, you know.
Are you going to come to me or am I going to come to you, Brohim?
Brohim, yeah. Hey, Brohim.
I like the Brohim.
It well, feels like, about as dated as his goatee with no mustache.
Yeah, but it's also, you know, you don't know that's his brother. You know, that's just like, what's up, bro? And it's not until he's like, bring up mom that you're like, oh, that is that motherfucker's brother, you know?
Well, they have the same last name, too.
Oh, do they?
They said earlier in the movie, the cop dude looks it up. He says, I don't know about a Joey, but I found a Richie.
All right.
Yeah, I don't know the Joey Cusack, but there's a Richie.
And he runs the fucking mob. Oh, yeah. I let that wash over me. All right. Never mind. I'm an idiot.
And then you finally get to meet Richie.
Cusack.
Which is a weird... Richie Cusack doesn't really scream, you know, Irish mob.
Yeah.
I think they changed these names from the
original graphic novel, which I have never read.
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be an Italian mob.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was reading a quick Wikipedia like synopsis of it, though. And the big difference that I saw that I can't believe that Cronenberg cut out of the movie, because it's like just perfectly in the Cronenberg wheelhouse, is that Richie is actually not Joey's brother. He's just his best childhood, his best friends growing up in childhood. And he actually gets captured by the mob and tortured for 20 years. And he's literally just like a torso, a head, and what's left, I guess, of some stumps of his arms.
What the fuck?
They've just been slowly amputating his body for 20 years.
I was, why did they cut that out?
I think they thought it was more too Cronenberg. Over the top. Right? It does seem like it's a Cronenberg idea, yeah. Doesn't it? It's like, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that there's not a whole lot in this that feels very Cronenberg, like body horror kind of thing. Like the closest
the
to that is
shots of the face after he got his head fucking blown off in his cheek. You know, they do that. And the eye thing is done really well. You know, all the blood stuff works.
Yeah, but I mean, aside from like the coffee pot to the face and then like that one shot where you see it like kind of and bleeding out, like there's not a whole lot else that feels
the
super.
The shotgun blast was perfect, and it sounded great.
Yeah, yeah. But that just feels like normal like action movie violence.
2005?
You know, I don't think you see, even today in action movies, you know, or gangster movies, I don't know if you see the violence quite like this.
It's a little more gory.
Yeah, this is.
It looks real. You know, they did it. They went. You know, they're trying to make it as like, you know, movie real as they could. You know, it's super fucking graphic, and quick.
It is quick.
Yeah.
And then you linger on it.
I love Viggo like fucking like he wrenching his body in the diner to like to make sure that the cover, you know, that everyone's still dead. Like he always checks. This is a guy that's been in this situation before because they always come back, you know.
That's true, they do.
You know, so motherfucker, we're not dropping the gun until we know, you know.
But I guess this one isn't as gross as the other Cronenberg movies, but this one does still have that theme of transformation.
Mm.
You know, it's like Joey, who is Joey? I killed Joey. Now I'm Tom. And once we have this violent act of saving this diner, now Tom is just slowly fading away and Joey's taking over. I don't know. I that's pretty on brand with Cronenberg.
Yeah, I see that.
It's just, you know, not as ooey and filled with vaginas as we're used to.
Yeah. Well, this has kind of been my standard of like, oh, I can watch a Cronenberg movie. This one and Eastern Promises are both in this same sort of like, oh, it's violent, and there's some flashes of like, oh, shit, that's some shit going down. But it's not like the fucking body horror craziness. And I think that was what I appreciated the most about this for it being a Cronenberg movie, that he has such interesting themes that he explores and such interesting ways to consider those parts of the human condition. But he was reined in one way or another.
One of the biggest things that he has done with me on every film I've ever seen is he really can make you feel uncomfortable. And with this day and age, with so much bullshit that we see, we're also like inundated with so much crazy shit that we're kind of like numb to it all, really. Because after a while, you see so much of it, you know, that it is what it is. And still, I can watch that fucking like stairway sex scene, and it's just fucking like it's tone and the way he covers things. It's like it's just like it's so fucking uncomfortable, you know. You can make me feel uncomfortable, which
is
excellent.
That's the whole point, though.
I know that's correct. What I'm saying. No, correct. But they nail it, though. You know, it's right. It's good.
Well, I was trying to think about, like, what? I don't know. Why does his awkward work better? I don't know. Why does his uncomfortable work so well? I don't know. Is it because it's layered? It's just, it has other things for you? I don't know. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, because a lot of filmmakers try to do uncomfortable, and it's just, it doesn't feel emotionally satisfying. There's something about the way Cronenberg does uncomfortable that feels like you're earning some kind of an emotional payoff. I don't always want to go there with him, but he does fucking get there.
It's usually like, I don't know. The gross thing's usually a metaphor for something else, and I don't know. It's hard to view the first time, but the second viewing,
Well, the stairway sex thing works for me because there's that moment where he's like, well, holy shit. He's like fucking manhandling or whatever. And then they get into the sexual position and like it starts to go there and he fucking turns away and she grabs him and pulls him back in. If that beat wasn't in there, it would have played completely fucking different. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so that's the only beat in that entire thing. And that's cinema. That's a moment, you know, like we were building to that moment. And then everything else that happens around that is what it is because we got to there. Like, he's really good at like setting up these, like, it's why that fucking ending dinner scene works so fucking well. We have all this time to breathe. And when we finally said, like I said, then the little kid goes and like invites dad back into the family. Like there's like this thing, like he's always building to these things and he does them like masterfully. Now there's shaky shit all around it sometimes, but he still lands really great moments.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. That is the thing, that with the emotional journey, there's peaks and valleys and it's a fucking ride that we're going on. And sometimes it feels really, really rickety. But at the end, that was a roller coaster and we just went somewhere.
Yeah.
And we feel it the whole time.
Was anybody else just hearing fucking Lord of the Rings the whole time?
Oh my God, dude. There are so many little score moments that I was like, oh, that's like an Aragorn score right there.
It's like our hero. There's like a hero's theme. Like every time that, like, especially at the beginning, we keep building like, oh, here's our hero dad with the fucking French horns and shit.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
It's just that little da-da-da-da-da-da-da thing that he does that... He has so much of it in Lord of the Rings that bringing it back as many times as he does in this.
It's like they were out still recording Lord of the Rings shit. And he's like, hey, guys, while I got you here, go ahead and turn to page 34. We're going to go ahead and like record these scenes.
I was actually looking up to see what was in between Lord of the Rings and this movie, because he could only have had like, what, a project or two?
Yeah, I mean.
Oh, The Aviator was in between Return of the King and History of Violence.
Well, there you go. All right. Yeah.
And then the following year, he did The Departed. Look at that. Howard Shore was like on a mob movie kick there for a while.
Yeah.
Give me your Irish gangster picks. Oh, I guess we should talk about the budget. It was $32 million, which was David Cronenberg's biggest budget.
Really?
I think that may be true now, today. I think that may be his biggest budget ever.
Wow. Did that go to talent or...
Talent and, well, this one, he actually had a pretty big set on this one because they had the whole diner set and then they recreated the town outside the diner, that whole window.
Yeah.
So that's built all of that. Yeah.
Which is incredible because it looks great. Like
with the fucking car actually, that can drive through. Yeah.
No, but there's a shot where he walked. I watched it again today. Like, and I was watching that area for that. But like he walks out of the building and then like looks down the street and you see the sky and everything.
Well, yeah. The stuff that's on the actual like street that's not inside the actual diner, that was shot on location in, well, I forget what
Toronto
it is.
Toronto or somewhere in Canada.
It was the name of the town, Millbrook, I think is.
All right. So all the exteriors there are real.
Real.
Like when you go inside, you look out the window, it's all fake.
It's all fake, yeah.
Okay.
But I mean, there's even scenes where like when Ed Harris walks in and leaves the diner, you see him. And the car that's like parked out there that Tom sees, that's a set.
That's all on a fucking soundstage? Holy shit.
Yeah. They did really good. Well, what my favorite thing is the fucking sunlight on the cook. The cook's shot.
Yeah.
The way the sun bounces off the fucking floor and like hits the top like goddamn ceiling area, you know, like right where near the ceiling is to the top of the it's so perfect, and the way it's bouncing off the oven. It's like, man, that's exactly how that would look in real life.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, there's a lot of skip bounce shots in this that like he likes. Let's get some hard light coming in through here.
And most of it was broad lit, which it didn't bug me. I was watching it. I was like,
the stuff in the diner is. Most of the movie itself isn't.
No, it's 80% broad lit.
Oh wow.
Yeah, it feels right. No, I'm telling you,
it does. Yeah.
On my second round, I really looked at like where it was all coming from, and yeah, it like they live in that fucking. It's super sidey. But it's always front side lit, which is interesting.
Well, it's motivated by the locations and by the sets.
It is like, by all the where the practicals are, and like if people were sitting on a couch, they would be would be lamps behind them, but they were still lighting front of the couch. Like you just put a fucking China ball on the ground.
Sure.
And there was also doing a lot of low light, but like behind a couch, mm-hmm. they'd put a light behind the couch, and if you walk by, people would get shadows thrown up on the wall beside them. So nothing was ever high. It was always like hidden low and not even motivated. And there were some sexy little kickers and stuff. So people would come and stand in doorways and they would just appear with a slight little kicker on them. So they're doing a lot of cool lighting, but it was all low or subtle and all broad mostly. Interesting.
Well, one of my favorite scenes lighting wise was after this stupid ass baseball game. God, that's a cheesy fucking baseball game. But when they're in the locker room and they have the whole confrontation between the two kids, like the light coming in through those windows that's supposed to be like this like super warm afternoon light,
it's
and
like
everybody's
color temperature straw is yellow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It God, it looks so fucking good. Like that's a moderately interesting set, but the way it's lit just makes it like fucking sexy as hell. And everybody's like got this glorious warm backlight edge, and like there's one angle where you can kind of see a window behind them where they change where the edge is coming from and
color,
it goes to
yeah.
the side
it goes,
and
goes more right
yep and then that one fucking window is just blown out but you don't really see any
and
like streams of light
orange
it's on the bully shot.
And I noticed that too, and I was like, oh, but you know what, fuck it. And there's a lot of things like the scene where they bust into the diner and they attack the customer, the lady. Mm-hmm, like when they cut to her, she's got like immaculate like wrap light, but like in all the master shot stuff, she's in shadow the whole time. Like and they do it all the fucking time. Like when the son is standing at the door watching the dad outside and it's after they show up at the ending before the shotgun thing happens.
Yeah.
His son is looking through it. When they cut over there, he's got incredible lighting, and then when they cut back wide, it's just black up there on that fucking porch.
Oh yeah, no. That whole scene is like that. Like when Viggo walks up into the fucking close up, when he's like, "Come here, come closer." Like he literally, you can watch him walk into the neg. Like there's plenty of room right next to the camera for that to like walk with him or to just have a big like 12 by. But no, he walks in, and then you can see the neg just kind of come in ever so slightly. Like it's kind of amazing how much they get away with in terms of like. Yeah, we're just going to do this, but it fucking feels right in the scene and it feels right in the moment.
Yeah, they shape it. The worst one, though, in the whole movie is the opening shot where the fucking car drives under a fucking 12 by solid. And you see the fucking, like, the straight hard ass line. And he just goes
to
the 12 by solid. Yeah. I was like, ew. But, you know, but also still cool because it was a long take on a crane that went into a fucking Steadicam shot.
Yeah, that's a great fucking opener. Of all the things in this movie that I remember from when it came out in like 2005 when I saw it, that was that slow ass fucking opener with the sound effects where it sounds like it just sounds hot. Like,
those
cicadas.
The cicadas do so much fucking work. I mean, the first couple seasons of Walking Dead relies really heavily on that sound effect to make you feel like it's that wet, hot
that wasn't
Georgia.
Intentional. Yeah. They were just fucking cicadas when they were shooting, and they had to add them in there because if you shoot in the South, there's
well, maybe it's this fucking movie that makes it feel like that to me, though.
Oh, this
like,
wasn't shot in the South. This was all shot in Canada.
Yeah.
It's Cronenberg film,
but it feels it. It feels warm, feels hot, and I like how slow this opening is. Like, we're just going to mosey into this violence, and you're going to fucking...
shoot a little kid.
That she delivers well the first time, the second or third time. I'm like, ah.
Oh, what's that? No,
that little child actor, yeah.
Cronenberg can't direct kids.
I don't care. The filmmaking is so fucking strong, man. Like, what are we fucking talking about? Like, that whole sequence is great. That one opener, and then when he goes in, like, the way the camera is just floating around the room and slowly revealing the violence, and then, boom, we shoot the kid, and it cuts on the girl screaming. Oh, that's great. Come on. We're in the hands of a master right now, delivering cinema for our eyeballs to feed our souls.
God, everything's really great except for that one actor's performance. That's all I'm saying. Like,
just the one. Though.
It wasn't even a performance. Yeah. It's just like a repeated whimper. Come on. All right.
Yeah, that is a performance.
We should have just cut that second whimper out. You know, we didn't have another whimper.
me, Mama. I'm so sad.
I'm just saying, like, that feels like quintessential Cronenberg. Like, this is such a fucking strong scene with so many elements, and then there's just one thing that just doesn't sit right, and it's like, it was so close to working. Why does it now feel like that? That's weird. Okay. I see what he's going for. Emotionally, you get me 95% of the way there, but the kid takes me out of it.
All right, to be fair, I mean, we've all listened to a David Cronenberg interview from now. I can't imagine that guy with kids. Like, it'd be like a Harvard professor sitting down and being like, yes, let's talk about why we use that color red on the Mickey Mouse drawing. What does that mean about ourselves? What does red symbolize? Ooh, are you angry? He definitely doesn't give off the Spielberg vibes, okay?
No, that's true. Yeah.
Which I don't, you know, if you ever watched any Spielberg behind the scenes, you know, his directing's like, look over there, look surprised. Ah, okay, you're crazy. All right, cool. Ah, look over there. Go big eyed. Ah, all right, okay, cut. Print that. We're done. It's like, God damn, that guy's good.
Maybe he just, I wonder how Cronenberg would be if he brought someone in like that when he had scenes with kids.
He just needs to bring in a Spielberg or some, you know, someone that's
just
really
like
good.
10% of the time. Just, hey, Steven, can you just for like 10 minutes? Come on. Come on.
Hey, M. Night, you're all into this, this horror scene. Why don't you help me out? You've worked with kids before. I saw The Sixth Sense.
See? Good kid acting.
Yeah. Yeah.
It exists, goddammit.
Well, that's like one of the best child performances of all time. Come on. Not fair.
I'm just saying, if there's a kid in a Cronenberg movie, it's trash. Like,
yeah, that's why I fucking hated The Brood.
All right, yeah. Look at
it. And even the fucking the son, who I think he was acting well. I just think that his reactions were younger than he is. I think they should have played him a little older.
Oh, you mean young Jesse Eisenberg?
Yeah.
Fair. No, I just look. He's a young kid, and he is literally surrounded by a bunch of heavy hitters.
That's fair. So why do you cast the kid that can't stand up to other people who...
Who are you going to cast at that age that's going to do that?
Jesse Eisenberg.
Oh, yeah, okay.
No, I did like when he approaches his dad, he's like, so, if I fucking rob the whatever store, are you going to fucking, like, you know, want your fucking
cut?
Oh,
my God.
You know, he's like,
are you
going to
have
comedic.
Me whacked?
Are you going to have me whacked? I that was almost comedic, you know?
No, that was one of the moments that was
instead
a little
of a
awkward.
Teenager
like,
tantrum.
Why? Like,
that was supposed to be funny, though, I think.
You think so?
Yeah, no, that was supposed to be funny.
Okay, I thought it was like comedy.
It was definitely awkward funny. Yeah,
I think he's like we actually had to cut the score out because the laugh was like so big right here.
So I don't think it was intended to be comedy. He just let it.
It just happened
comedy.
To be comedy.
No, Cronenberg. Like I think he knows when he's being funny. I mean, like we said last week, he claims all of his movies are comedies.
Yeah, The Shrouds, that romantic comedy.
Did you get a chance to see that, Kristen?
No, it's not over here.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll mail it to you when it comes out.
Okay.
You need to watch that one.
That was good. Yeah.
Look, see, Mike said it was good. So you know you know it's watchable.
Oh, and I did see on Wikipedia this was one of the last films to be released on VHS.
Yeah.
I think it was actually the last film to be released on
this
VHS.
This is the film that killed VHS. They're like, look, we're not doing it again. We are not releasing another motherfucking VHS.
Listen, we sold four. We can't do it anymore, guys. Come on.
Like, look, shut the fucking machines down.
Which is crazy, because, like, when did Blu-ray hit? 2007?
Seven or eight, something like that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's really close to, like... When did Spider-Man 3 come out? It's really close to Spider-Man 3's release. It's like the year...
Spider-Man 3 was like around the beginning of the Blu-ray?
That was... Yeah. Yeah, I think that was like 8 or 9. Hmm. Maybe.
It was one of the first Blu-rays to get released.
The first DVD I ever watched was The Green Mile. I don't know why I know that, but that it was.
Because that's an important thing. My first were Lethal Weapon 4 and Blade.
Your first DVD?
Yeah.
You guys remember this?
Fuck, I think my first DVD was,
you don't remember your first DVD?
Come on, Chris, you know you do. Come on, think about it just for a second. Hone it.
I think mine was The Matrix, actually, which feels great to be a first on the fucking DVD.
I remember begging my mom to buy me the VHS for fucking Ace Ventura When Nature Calls. I have a very vivid memory of that. But my first DVD was definitely Green Mile.
I know we had the Green Mile on DVD. We had... Was that Arnold Schwarzenegger Eraser? We had that on DVD.
Oh yeah.
I don't think those were like my. I think those were like my parents' movies.
What was the first movie you watched on a DVD?
I have no idea. What do you? I don't know how you have this memory. I don't know,
because it was like a new technology. It was like, oh my god, we're gonna watch movies on like this really cool like new thing.
A Knight's Tale.
I just remember having one. We had a DVD player next to our VCR. Oh, I remember when we got the combination of the VCR and the DVD to make more room.
All right, but like, so it's DVDs, one device instead of two.
Yeah.
DVDs came out in 1995, to put this in perspective. And Blu-rays came out in 2006.
They did not come out in 1995. They didn't hit
just looked it up.
They didn't hit the prosumer. They didn't hit the consumer
until
market.
1996.
Until 1998.
Okay. Yeah. I do remember when Titanic came out, it was a question of, do you want it on DVD or VHS? I do remember that.
Widescreen or letterboxed?
But, yeah, and I remember that question of what, yeah, do you want it in widescreen or not? But, like, what was my first DVD? I have no idea. The first DVD I bought, I don't know. The first one I played, I don't know. Like,
yeah, the first DVD players and disc were available in Japan, but March of 1997 is what I saw.
In Japan?
No, in the U.S. In Japan, okay. It was November of 1996.
I mean, do you have like a list of the whatever they released? Or like, I can tell what I bought. I don't know.
No. Well, if it didn't make that big of a mark, yeah. But it is interesting to think that a year after this movie was released is when the Blu-ray came out. I would figure that Blu-rays would be older than this.
I remember Blu-rays came out like a couple years later, because I was like really angry that I had just like bought all these DVDs that like now are like out of, and I was like, well, I'm not buying any Blu-rays then, because like if it's just going to continue to be replaced, then I'm not doing it.
Christian, I did find a list, and fucking Eraser is on it.
I told you, my parents had it, yeah.
Point of No Return, Blade Runner, Eraser, The Fugitive. I'm just saying, like, boom. It's
those were some of the first DVDs that were even available.
Yeah.
You fucking had one. That's pretty sick.
I bet you it looks like shit now. If you put it in right now, it'd probably look like block ass. Dude. Just giant blocks. You couldn't even see, like what is that?
Well, that?
That's a block. It's a color. That goes another block beside it.
I don't think it's that bad.
Listen, we know he's buff, but it's not that bad.
I'm getting to the point right now where, like, DVDs before, I don't know, 2017, I'm like, oh god, or not DVDs, but Blu-rays before 2017, I'm like, I don't know, we need a remaster. I don't think I'm gonna buy that, just because they tend to scrub all the grain out, man.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, that's true.
And you get these bigger TVs, once you get past like 65 inches, grain structure matters a lot.
Yeah. It is interesting to see how much grain gets scrubbed from streaming things just so they can have... Like, Netflix has a whole fucking algorithm to clean the grain out, stream it, and then recreate the grain at the user end, like, to try and get some amalgamation of originality. Like, come on, can't we just...
That's wild.
Yeah, it is kind of wild.
And we're making people look like plastic, and it's like, why are we doing that?
Yep. I've been seeing videos of people saying that Netflix is removing text out of movies. Like openings of things, like the Russell Crowe Robin Hood. Apparently, if you play that, the opening text crawl isn't there. It's just solid screens.
Oh, they do that over here, but I thought it was just because it was in English.
Yeah, they're doing that for some reason.
Why are they doing that? I mean, like, if you want to fast forward it, you can. Like, it's on a streaming set. What the fuck? That didn't make any sense. Just give me the fucking full movie.
Yeah, I know. Don't edit my shit.
If I want to fast forward, guess what? You already gave
That's
me
why
control.
They made the skip intro button, motherfucker.
You start God getting that for movies, and just like, no, I'm good. I don't need this setup.
Skip opening crawl.
gladiator comes up and like, whatever, the Romans, I got it. Yeah, move on.
Yeah, we get it, yeah.
Oh, are we at ratings here, guys? Anybody got anything else for A History of Violence? It's a big no. So, who's going first? Who's rating A History of Violence? It's also a bunch of silence, so I guess that means me. Well, obviously, I'm going to give this movie a 10 because it's a David Cronenberg fucking masterpiece. I mean, come on. What is this? This is like a top 10 Cronenberg for sure. I don't know if I'd put it in top 5. Maybe top 5.
Top 5.
Yeah, okay, maybe. I don't know. No, I wouldn't put it in top 5. But it's really, really good. You know, it's a really good entry point for Cronenberg. I would never recommend for somebody to start here because it would set him up for failure. You'd be like, oh my God, this guy's like a really like just normal filmmaker. He's like a Martin Scorsese. And then your mind would be blown and you'd be like, what the fuck is all this weird shit?
I'm right here, Brian.
Yeah, it happened to a lot of the people I went to film school with. They were like, oh, History of Violence, this movie's great. And then they saw Crash and were like, what the fuck? I get it. I do like what this film does for gangster films. I do feel like violence is romanticized in a lot of gangster movies, especially the first half. I mean, it's hard to argue, especially when you look at like rap artists that have glorified Scarface for how many decades now. They have the poster, the rap, the T-shirts and everything else. An audience tends to forget the last hour of those movies where the criminal dies a horrible death and ends up alone in despair, but it's still romanticized. I mean, I think the first line of Goodfellas is, for as long as I could remember, I always wanted to be a gangster. You know, and you're getting ready and starting to a flashy montage. This movie starts slow. This movie starts with normal life. A History of Violence is middle America. And we do see simple, violent things. And just in everyday life. But we get to see normal life and how it goes to shit and decay when these violent acts happen. This is the movie that I wanted Funny Games to be. Funny Games was a TED Talk because they cut the violence out and I can't get emotionally invested in that movie. It's an intellectual think piece. This film allows you to get involved in the violence because even if the violence doesn't shock you after it's happened and you're like, oh, I've seen all this great makeup before, it's okay. The characters around in the scene are reacting to it, so you know it's bad. The filmmaker is holding your hand. I don't know. I really like the layered screenplay. I really like a lot of the acting. I understand what you guys are saying about the kid acting. I do think there are moments where Cronenberg is more worried about a theme, an idea, a metaphor, or even just a picture. And I think okay, the dream sequence at the beginning of the movie is very heavy-handed. It's sappy, cheesy, I think is what you guys said, but you can take that picture of that whole family in the bed and you can take that photograph and the photograph of them sitting at the dinner table at the end and put them side by side. And, I think those two pictures wrap up exactly what the movie is through visuals. That's amazing. Just going to point that out there. In the hands of a master! It's a 10. Who's going next?
I'll go next. I like all the layers that this movie has. I like the fact that A History of Violence can be taken so many different ways. It's both the character's history of violence. It's the American history of violence. It's film history of violence. It's fucking humanity's history of violence. And I love that Cronenberg explores these themes in such layered and nuanced ways. I kind of hate his fucking dialogue and the ways that he gets most of his actors to deliver some shit. Just it tempers too much of the there's so much weight and depth to these things that I'm like, all right, I don't know if it's I don't like him as a director or if it's just he needs to get someone else to write his dialogue or what it is. Like, there's just there's so much to it that I'm like, yes, I'm there. Wow, that was fucking cheesy, man. Why is that pulling me out? But you know what? Like, this movie isn't concerned about that. This movie leans in more often than not to the cheesiness. Like Brian was saying, the opening scene with the family is so like
Leave It to Beaver over the top. This is the American family. Everybody cares about each other. And, oh, what's the problem, Dad? And blah, 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 blah. Like, okay, we get it. Cool. They're a tight-knit family. Like, he uses those kinds of moments as, like, a quick jump to, like, establish archetypes, I think, is what he's trying to do. I think it's some, again, it's a little over the top. It's a little heavy-handed with the dialogue and the ways that he writes it. But he gets there. And I don't think the movie cares that it's a little cheesy. The movie just moves along, and I appreciate that about this. For an hour and a half, it does have some plotting moments where the pacing feels a little bit like, okay, we get it. But for the most part, it moves. I like that there are so many characters that are doing so many different things in this, like the cross story between the father and the son, and the ways that those are exploring violence through their environments. I think there's a lot to love about this movie, but I'm gonna try and wrap this up. Cronenberg has some great fucking ideas that I really love, and I was one of the people, like Brian's friends in film school, that thought, oh, if this is what Cronenberg is like, I'm gonna fucking love this guy. Little did I know. Which is maybe why this movie and Eastern Promises work so well for me, because it is some of those more grotesque elements that he kind of reins himself in on. I wish he had some of those talents in directing dialogue and children, but you know what? He's got his fucking lane, and he usually sticks in it. And this is a pretty fucking great movie. I like the themes that he explores. I like the characters that he works with. I'm going to give this an 8.5. I don't love everything about it. I don't think the whole thing fucking works, but for what it does and what it's trying to do, this movie has sat with me for 20 years, and I enjoyed going back to it and watching it again. So yeah, 8.5.
Wow. That's higher than I thought you were going to go, Griggs. Who's next?
I think there are some amazing themes in this movie. I actually had the opposite reaction. I saw this movie when it came out, and I hated it, and so I avoided David Cronenberg for a very long time, because I was like, if this is what his movies are like, I don't want to see any of them. And watching it again helped me appreciate a lot of the nuance and the themes and everything that he is attempting to do here. And I also went back and looked for his body horror, and there are moments here and that it does shine, but it's so quick, it's so fast, you'll miss it if you're not looking for it, I think. That being said, this did feel like a community theater piece, and it was painful for me to watch. And I hated it when it came out, and I can appreciate a lot more about it now, but I still really don't like it. It's just, I was going to say boring, but that's not the right word. It's dull. It's dull. And it's a shame, because I think the foundation is good. The structure is good. Even the acting, most of it is fantastic. And yet the dialogue, the scenes, everything, it doesn't work. Most of this movie does not work for me, even though I can appreciate everything that he is attempting to do here. And yeah, just based on the fact, just the resistance I have. And even actually when I was watching this again, I was like, maybe I'm getting David Cronenberg confused with somebody else. Maybe there's a different body horror director that I'm thinking of, and I'm just confusing the names. I don't know how he came to direct this. Anyway, I'm going to give it a 5. I was not happy with it.
A 5, Christy?
Yeah, a 5.
Mediocre. All right, Jared.
That's very shocking, Christy.
Isn't 5 technically average?
No, 5 is average. Yeah.
I'm very average.
That's what mediocre
means. Very mediocre.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mediocre is less than average, Brian.
Listen, no, just because you have a good movie doesn't mean, or a good idea doesn't mean it's a good movie, okay?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, but goddamn it, yeah. Kristen, he makes you feel things. Like, the man knows how to fucking tell a story with a goddamn camera. Way harsh, Ty. Way harsh.
Considering how much I hated it, I feel like I could have been harsher, okay? I feel like that is a generous vibe.
You know what? Yeah, look. Yes, I thought you were very sweet about it.
You're a dick. I need a paper towel.
That's like the third spit take we've given Brian in the last like 4 minutes.
I love it. That's the... Well,
hold on. Can I just add really quick? You know, I think, I don't use community theater in like a necessarily negative way. There's a reason community theater exists and there's a reason you go.
Not it's a negative way.
Not great, though.
There's some pretty good community theaters.
The community theater is a really interesting description because it articulates something that feels like it's worth doing as its foundation, as its base, but maybe it's not executed in a way that feels like it's worth being professional.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think it's a brilliant articulation.
Community theater aside and terrible fucking movie aside, it's still a fucking 10. Like this come on, guys. I mean, like, really? I don't know, man. This movie's one of the movies that'll make you fucking think about it afterwards. I don't know. I love all these little beats, and I was really, really happy to watch it again. I don't know. Maybe it's because we've been watching so much Cronenberg stuff, but I don't know, man. This one feels really good to me. It may be my first Cronenberg movie that I saw that I really like got. And then I went back and watched I knew about The Fly, and then went back and watched The Fly and all that. I don't know, man. It is a great entry drug to the Cronenberg world. Mm. So yeah, that's good. Now I need to see Eastern Promises. I haven't seen that one either.
Oh, get ready! It's just a penis. Every man has one.
Is that the only good thing about the movie? I haven't seen it.
Viggo Mortensen's dick.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the only good thing about the movie.
So yeah, it is the only thing.
It's just one of many great things about that.
It'll be at least a 3.5.
It's way longer than 3.5, Jerry. It's well over a 6. All right. That ain't no mediocre.
Meteocre, you say?
God damn it! All right. Does anybody have anything else?
Sounds like a paint that fucking Bob Ross would use. Exactly. Now we're going to break out the mediocre.
It's kind of a pink, kind of a red, you know.
Yeah. If you blend it right, it's purple.
Speaking of red, Jared, read us the Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, shit. I forgot we were doing such things. A History of Violence raises compelling and thoughtful questions about the nature of violence while representing a return to form for director David Cronenberg in one of his most uncharacteristic pieces. Rotten Tomatoes brings in A History of Violence with an 88% tomato meter with a 76% popcorn meter.
Kristen, everybody was higher than you.
That's okay, and average now, correctly.
Hey, man. This one just didn't hit her.
Not everyone has taste. It's okay. It's fine. I don't mind, Kristen, being the voice of reason here.
You know what? I don't think you appreciated this movie because the kid, when he was a coward, do you see him when he was on the baseball field? What his jersey? It was yellow because he's a yellow bastard. He's a coward.
This is why I lump it into the community theater. There's a lot of great ideas, a lot of really cool stuff going on. I don't want to watch it, though. Like, and I can talk about it afterwards. But is it like an enjoyable thing to sit through? No. Do I feel
this
no.
is like a fun, like, let's go get revenge on the mob? They're fucking coming after us, and like we're in witness protection program. Only we're not. But you know, like, this is a 70s, 60s kind of film, right? That was popular.
I feel like this is how I can tell if a movie is good or bad. This is my general, like, internal, like, scale. When I start rooting for the bad guys, that means it's a bad movie, okay?
You were rooting
very early on. Yes, I was rooting for the bad guys. Like, from, like, the second, yeah, he shows up in his stupid little baseball game and he's like, I think doing violence is unnecessary and cruel. Yeah, punch him in the face. That's fine. Like, let's go. Like, I did not root for anyone in this movie who I should have been rooting for. No.
If the wife would have had her tantrum moment, would that have like at least kicked it up a little bit for you?
No.
You
feel like,
tantrum moments. What are we talking about?
She did. I have tantrum moments. Yeah. She had multiple tantrum moments. No, and she even, like, she, like, starts, like, she's, like, he, when he tells her he's Joey and he, like, starts throwing, she starts throwing up. I'm just, yeah. like, get it together. Like, this is, yeah. this is the least of your problems at this point. Like, what are you doing?
Kristen, you realize this literally the life she has been living for 20 years is, like, a lie. Their last yeah. name
where did
is some made-up bullshit.
Come from?
Yeah. Your whole, yeah. your family's identity.
I did
identity.
Appreciate
Come on.
That she was mad about yeah. her name. Yeah. I thought that was
yeah,
great.
That was a great was moment. Really yeah. How does he write dialogue that brilliant and then get some of the other shit so fucking yes. awkward? That's what
exactly.
that's what
it's
blows
because,
my mind
know,
the most
he
about
does
Cronenberg.
I think he's funny and he is trying to be a little kitschy at times. He is trying to be tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
But it doesn't and he's it dry. Doesn't come off that way. It doesn't come off that they're being tongue in cheek. It comes off that like, oh, this is just bad. Like, you don't know what you're doing. Are you a bad actor? Is this bad directing? Like, and I know he's a good director and I know that they're good actors. So I don't know where the breakdown is. It has to be the dialogue.
Well, this is one of the, well, I mean, I guess if you look at the credits, this is one of the rare movies he didn't also write, but he did rewrite this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. This comes from a fucking comic book.
Well, I mean,
well, does he not get credit for adapting the script of the comic book? Is that?
Well, no, another writer adapted it. And then in order to get Viggo Mortensen and Ed Harris and Mario Bello involved, David Cronenberg pretty much was just like, look, guys, here goes the ideas. This is what I want to do. This is what I want to make. And I'm going to rewrite this. This is going to be better. Okay. And we're going to address all your concerns. And he did like the Maria Bello's her throwing up thing. That was her idea on set. That actually caused a little bit of a problem because they didn't build the bathroom. It was just a door, and then she's like, I really want this moment where I would go into the bathroom and not vomit in front of him. I don't want to vomit in front of him. I would like, I need privacy because he's a liar. And David Cronenberg's like, that's fucking brilliant. I love it. Somebody build me a
bathroom.
Build a bathroom. Yeah, right? So they took some flats, and then they were like, fuck shit, and then scrapped shit together. Yeah. I think they took a sink out of, like, one of the actual bathrooms on the soundstage.
I thought – I did – okay, so even though I did hate her throwing up, I did also think it was really brilliant in terms of, like, again, body horror and, like, how your body is like, the reactions of the body, and I kind of thought that was a Cronenberg thing. Interesting.
Yeah, there you go. See, yeah. And that's another actor bringing it in. They're in tune. They're already on the same wavelength. So with that, you've been listening to the Movie Crew Podcast. If you want to get in touch with us, you can do so by sending us an email to moviecrewpod@gmail.com. You can follow us on Facebook and X, not on Instagram. Jared, where can the audience follow you?
You can find me on X at Jared B. Callen.
Griggs, where can they follow you?
I'm on Instagram at Griggsy Media. That's GRIGGSY Media.
And Christian, where can they stalk you?
Please don't. But you can find me on Instagram at Kristen Magdalene. That's Kristen with a K and an I.
And you can stalk me at X at Elkins Edits. Whatever. We'll close out a little bit with, you know what? A piece of the end. We'll use a piece of the end music. There you go. Enjoy.